athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
I am indeed back, and it's great to be back with you today here on Box to Row. Look, for those that are in the Raleigh-Durham area, the Triangle area in North Carolina, maybe coming into town, perhaps into the Triangle area, the countdown to kickoff is Saturday, July the 20th. We've had a big buildup. It'll be the seventh Box to Row countdown to kickoff. Very much looking forward to this. We're going to be at Sticks and Vines in Durham, beginning with the coaches meet and greet at 5 p.m., followed by Showtime at 6 p.m., where I sit down with the coaches individually. We talk about their respective programs, the upcoming season, last season, etc. It promises to be a great time. Trey Oliver, the head football coach of North Carolina Central. Robert Massey, the head football coach at Winston-Salem State. Adrian Jones, the head football coach at Shaw. Vincent Brown, the head football coach at North Carolina A&T. Maurice Flowers, the head football coach at Johnson C. Smith. Marcus Hillier, the head football coach at Elizabeth City State. And just added to the docket, Richard Hayes, the head football coach at Fayetteville State. All going to be part of the countdown to kickoff. Hopefully you'll join us. If not, you can watch the countdown to kickoff live on the Box to Row YouTube page, as well as on Big Sports TV. And the program is going to air on Sirius XM. We'll have the channel. We'll announce that channel via our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So, I needed the week off last week. I needed a break, not from you all, and not necessarily from the show. I mean, we're coming up on 19 years of Box to Row. As a matter of fact, August 20th will be the 19th year on the air. On August the 21st, we began our 20th season of Box to Row, and I hope you've enjoyed the ride to this point. As a matter of fact, we've got a really, we're going to do something really big to celebrate the 20th year leading into 20 years of Box to Row. As a matter of fact, going to give you more information about that. But look, it was great to get away on last week, got away with the family. We went to, as a matter of fact, to Orlando, Kissimmee, I guess, more specifically, is where we stayed. And listen, it wasn't about, you know, all of the theme parks. Many, many theme parks are in Orlando or in the Orlando area, and you know them well, right? It wasn't necessarily about the theme parks. As a matter of fact, we only went to one theme park for the entire, really 7 days. We got there Saturday, maybe around 4 p.m. Eastern, left about 9 o'clock Eastern on Saturday morning. So, I mean, really, you know, Saturday to Saturday, maybe you count that, those Saturdays as one day. So it's really seven, you know, we were there 7 good days in Kissimmee and Orlando. One theme park only. We found a lot of other stuff to do. There's plenty of shopping, which we did plenty of that. We went, there's this a video arcade game, a place where you can pay like $25 and play all day long. All of the old school games, they have them all. Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Popeye. I hadn't seen Popeye in so many years. They had Centipede, they had Frogger, and they'd had some of the new games as well. And they had that, you know, you have air hockey, but then they had the air hockey game where you have sort of the men that are there and you control the men with the puck and all of that kind of stuff. Like, it was a bunch of fun. We chilled a lot. We were at a resort. We chilled a lot there. Did a lot. It was just a fantastic time and a much needed break because, look, for us here at Box to Roll, you know, and as the show gets older, I get older, I count things by seasons, right? So we're coming out of the season of what I would call sort of a down season, which is, and I'll get to what we're going to talk about today, who we're going to talk to today on the program. But we're coming out of a season where there are no college athletics. There have been no college athletics for about the last, maybe about the last month or so, ever since the College World Series. No college athletics. And so, of course, no NFL, no NBA in terms of games, although you have the Summer League games. You've got the WNBA going on, all of that. But it's been a downtime. It's been a bit of some downtime, and now that we're in these college football media days, the SWAC just had their media day this week. CIAA had its media day this week. MEAC's going to have its media day. Last week, the SIAC already had its media day. So we're getting back into the swing of things. Next, you're going to see, of course, next week, the HBCU coaches preseason poll will be released on next week. So it's becoming sort of seasons. I measure things by seasons now. Of course, the, you know, calling play-by-play will come up for football, and then right behind football, basketball. So it's like getting ready to be six months, and I'm not complaining because I love it. I've been doing it a very long time, but it's getting ready to be 6 months of just things going on pretty much every single weekend. I was saying this, I was talking to a couple of people, and I was saying, you know, for me, and let me think about, it was June, trying to think the weekend, but a couple of weekends ago was like my last weekend of not having to do anything basically on a weekend. We've got the countdown to kickoff this weekend. I've got something going on next weekend. So these upcoming weekends, I've got things leading up to the start of the actual college football season and then right into basketball. So this time off, this time down, time to relax, to spend with family, it was really invaluable and something that I really, really needed. And now I'm refreshed and we're ready to rock and roll as we begin the college football season. And we've got a lot with respect, lots going on with college football. I mean, my goodness, you have all of these new teams in the different conferences. You've got expansion of the college football playoff. There are so many different things that are going on. Listen, on today's program, there's a new movie that's going to air on Lifetime this Saturday, 8 p.m., 7 Central on Lifetime. It's called Abducted at an HBCU. And one of the stars of the program is Naturi Naughton Lewis, who's going to join us today here on the program. Now, you may say that name sounds familiar. Well, of course, Naturi Naughton Lewis played the role of Tasha St. Patrick in the series Power. So, and she's done a lot of other things, got some other things coming up. So we're going to talk some sports also today with Naturi Naughton Lewis here on the program. Looking very much forward to that. Look, I was so shocked. I believe it was on Sunday. Again, I had come back from the vacation Saturday, and I believe it was on Sunday that I saw, read about the passing of Jacoby Jones. Now, for those that don't know who Jacoby Jones was a really, really good football player, as a matter of fact. And he played, he was originally drafted by the Houston Texans, went on to the Baltimore Ravens, I think a couple of other teams along the way. But he had that really, really big Super Bowl in 2012 where he had that kickoff return for the touchdown coming out of the timeout. And then he had another really, really big catch that almost went for a touchdown from Joe Flacco. So he played his collegiate ball at Lane College. He was a fantastic player, was a third round pick out of Lane by the Texans in the 2007 NFL draft. And, you know, he passed away in his sleep at the age of 40. I was shocked because, you know, Jacoby Jones was a friend of this program. His first time on this program, as a matter of fact, was a couple of weeks before the 2007 National Football League draft. He came on the show. He'd come on the show while he was with the Texans, came on the program while he was with the Ravens. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, another great player who played at Tennessee State, was, well, let's put it like this, in the last 17 years, one of only two players from an HBCU taken in the first round of the draft. As a matter of fact, he was taken in the next year's draft in 2008 by the Cardinals, and I remember covering him. It was his rookie year at the Super Bowl in Tampa when the Steelers defeated the Cardinals, but I remember covering DRC at that Super Bowl and talking to him immediately after the Super Bowl. In any event, Jacoby Jones was a part of, I had a chance to talk with him in person. He was a part of DRC's, DRC does like this give back at Tennessee State, and it's a, you know, a charity basketball game and a weekend of events as we used to do those spring football game tours back in 2000, I think it was 2013. So, wow, I tell you what, very sad to hear about the passing of Jacoby Jones. Had a chance 5 years ago to rank the top 100 NFL players that played at HBCUs. Had Jacoby Jones as number 85 on my list. Like I said, really made an impact with the Ravens. Passing away, Jacoby Jones, a friend of this program, at the age of 40. Absolutely unbelievable. We got a lot more of Box to Row. As a matter of fact, I want to talk college football, a lot of college football talk today here on the program. And joining us a little bit later, actress Naturi Naughton Lewis. The Greater Raleigh Sports Alliance is proud to support the 7th annual Box to Row Countdown to Kickoff, and we are excited to welcome head coaches from area colleges and universities to the capital city. We look forward to another fantastic season of HBCU football filled with great games, rivalries, pageantry, and unforgettable fall Saturdays. The Greater Raleigh Sports Alliance works with local partners to grow the sporting event industry in our area. The GRSA has an extensive track record of securing and hosting successful tournaments and championships, resulting in significant economic impact for the region and an enhanced quality of life for our residents. In 2022, Raleigh was named Sports Travel Best Host City. To learn more, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at RaleighNCSports. Best of luck to all area HBCU football programs this season.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to
Box
Row.
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Still to come here on Box to Row, actress Naturi Naughton Lewis going to join us on the program. The new film, Abducted at an HBCU, airs on Lifetime this Saturday, 8 p.m., 7 Central. So she's going to talk about her role. Looking forward to that conversation. And still plenty more to talk about. College football, I mean, for all intensive purposes, is here. course, Box to Row having its seventh countdown to kick off this Saturday at Sticks and Vines in Durham. If you're in the area, come on out. We look forward to having you and to seeing you, as a matter of fact. So as I was doing some research and trying to figure out all of the different teams that have made the moves, the Pac-12 is in essence no longer with just two teams in the Pac-12. Utah has moved to the Big 12. Oregon has moved on to the Big 10. It's so crazy, not to mention Texas, Oklahoma in the SEC. It is so crazy. It is so hard to keep up. Okay. It's hard. Listen, there are times when I think Syracuse, and I'm talking about more recently, maybe within the last couple of years, that I'm still thinking Big East. Okay. And that's how entrenched, I was. You go back in the day with Syracuse and St. John's and Georgetown, more specifically, in football. Now, of course, the Big East did have a pretty good football conference with the likes of, Boston College, Miami, Georgia Tech, which all of those teams moved into the ACC. And so that brings me sort of to my point. It's interesting. I was looking through these conferences and, had to reacclimate myself to the fact that the ACC added California, SMU, and also Stanford. Now, when that happened, immediately in my mind, because as I've talked about on this program, when we've talked about North Carolina A&T making the move ultimately to the CAA, when Hampton did it several years ago, a lot of those moves are less about athletics and more about academics. And the A&T move was no doubt more about academics. I know people don't want to hear that, but that's what it was about. A&T has become the largest HBCU by student population. And so now there's a bigger base and a bigger footprint to recruit students from all the way up top in Rhode Island, all the way down south, I guess. I guess A&T would be, maybe UNC Wilmington may be the most furthest southern school in the CAA. A&T, Elon, they're all right there, whatever the case may be. But immediately came to my mind about the ACC and in particular Stanford? Now the ACC has maybe, when you talk about prestige of schools and on the Power Five level, right? Are there any two more or any two schools more prestigious than Stanford and Duke? Now you have the two most prestigious schools, I would argue, at the Power Five level, athletics aside. California's not a bad school either. I mean, I think, when the ACC made this move, that probably wasn't the thought process, but that's sort of, to me, how I looked at it, because I, having put college football aside for the last, for the most part, for the last, 3, 4, 5 months, and then I look back at all of these, the realignment and all of these schools in the different conferences, that immediately is what came to my mind as far as the ACC is concerned. Now, at the end of the day, I think, and just kind of revisiting, and because we were in the moment when you found out that these three schools were going to be members of the ACC, you're in the moment. I've had time to, I'm not going to say time to reflect. It's not something that I necessarily thought about, but it triggered my mind when I looked at the conference, the ACC, with the addition of the three new schools, which now brings the conference up to 17 schools. Look, Basically, the ACC needed bodies, okay? And making this move provided bodies. Now SMU is no slouch when it comes to football. No slouch at all. And we'll see what happens. Now, from a historical standpoint, when you think about the ACC, a couple of things come to my mind. A, when you talk about college realignment, in essence, and schools making the jump, the conference for this happening in the modern day, in my mind, is the ACC. It's been, what, about 20 years or so since the ACC acquired Virginia Tech, Miami, and Boston College to help bolster its football programs. We already knew that the ACC at that time, and that's no longer the case. I think even the SEC, from a basketball, a men's basketball perspective, has caught up now to the ACC. Although you got to always respect Duke, and you know Duke is going to make a run. UNC made a bounce back, and remember, in Coach Davis's first season, made the run all the way to the national championship game. Had a bit of a down season in 22-23 and then bounced back in 23-24. NC State made obviously a big run all the way to the Final Four. So even though some conferences have caught up and maybe surpassed the ACC, the ACC is still very solid in basketball. That move going back 20 years ago was to bolster football. Florida State was not the dominant program it once was when it came into the ACC. I believe the Florida State won one national championship, perhaps two, as a member. Well, they won it in 2013. I think it was 2013, 12, 13, 14, right around that time, won the national championship. And, of course, Florida State won a national championship in the 90s as at least one. It may have been two, but at least one as members of the ACC. So you have all of those schools that were out. Syracuse, excuse me. But I think down the line, Syracuse was added. You added some other schools. And now look where we are with respect to not only college realignment, but to schools making the jump from one conference to another conference. Okay. And by the way, these additions, academics, from an academic, you know, maybe a marketing standpoint, are good, really good additions, particularly at Stanford. From an athletic standpoint, and really talking about your main sports, your main two revenue producing sports, which are football and basketball, not so much. And it's interesting that the ACC now has to kind of add schools, add bodies in a way. Why? Because Florida State is suing to get out of the ACC, and so is Clemson. Clemson and Florida State, ironically, the two dominant programs when it comes to football, and probably the two lesser programs when it comes to basketball. Although if you want to look at, you know, if you want to look at baseball, I mean, you talk about really, really good baseball programs, particularly Florida State. You're talking about one of the really, really good baseball programs. But now the ACC is trying to survive as well. So let's say it happens. I don't know. Again, you know, Florida State and Clemson, while signing the agreement a couple of years ago, binding itself all the way up from a TV rights standpoint, I think all the way to 2036 with ESPN. I guess it seemed like a good idea at the time. But again, not to get off subject, but that just shows the explosion of college football. College football has exploded here it was already big going back some 5 years ago, but it has exploded here, I would say, in the last 5 years, especially from a revenue standpoint. And so now Florida State, Clemson, are locked into those contracts. through 2036, not happy about it because of all the money it could be getting from being perhaps in the SEC and not happy about his situation. So despite signing the contract, has decided to sue to get out of the contract. Even if those two teams left, okay, your football goes down quite a bit unless the conference can find a way to sort of rebuild that. I mean, you know, at any given time, Miami could come through. NC State should have a good program this year. You know, Virginia Tech has been really, really good in the past, but I think about Virginia Tech. I mean, yeah, good more recently, but those Michael Vick years, et cetera, that's when Virginia Tech was in the Big East. But at least the ACC is going to have bodies, okay? Whereas what have we seen from the Pac-12? Basically no longer in existence with only two. The Pac-12 had a media day with Washington State and Oregon State to the point that the Pac-12 made it an open bar, open bar media day with those two schools. We've got four major conferences in the Power Five. And I think we're probably good at least for right now from that standpoint. In other words, there was a lot of talk about conferences shrinking to three, but you've got four conferences and, you know, the ACC's got 17 teams. You know, even if it was down to 15, it's still in pretty good shape. So it's interesting how all of that is played out. And man, Stanford, Cal, and SMU now are ACC schools. Up next here on Box to Row, we're talking with actress Naturi Naughton Lewis.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Here with Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson. It's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Main event! Jey Uso joining us here. Could there be a possible return to the bloodline?
For me?
Yes. At some point.
I'm gone, D. Hey, I threw the deuces up before. I'll do it again, man.
Come on, main event. That's family, man. I mean, I'm not talking about now. I get it. But down the line, like, come on.
Hey, D, you see how they be treating me, man? Come on, man. That something. It be your own family sometimes be doing you wrong, Lou. I gotta go, man. Hey, I'm doing all right by myself.
She's Simone Biles.
Actually, really fun. Like, to be honest, had a lot of fun. We were like, oh, of course, like, we're in the best shape of our life. We're feeling confident about our body, and we hope that other young girls and women, like, feel that being strong is still beautiful.
The one and only Michael Strahan. And cannot have you on without talking about Texas Southern. Cannot. So how did you ultimately end up at Texas Southern?
Yeah, from Houston, grew up in Germany. When I was a senior in high school, my dad said, I'm going to send you to stay with your uncle in Houston and get a football scholarship. So I went to Houston. I played at Westbury High School for 1 year. Texas Southern was probably the only school that saw me play, being right there in Houston and being a local boy. And Coach Walter Highsmith, I went over to see him, and he offered me a scholarship. It was perfect for me, man, to go to the HBCU, to go to Texas Southern. The size of the school, the education they gave me, not just in the classroom, but about life. I would have been swallowed up at another school. I wouldn't have felt as if I really could have made a difference or had a real purpose of being there. But at Texas Southern, I always felt like I could make a difference and I had a purpose.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Skylar Diggins of the WNBA. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. You know, just been able to work a lot on my body and my shape and a lot of things that I feel like I needed to work on in the off season. Was able to get that done, and you know, it's showing.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip hop, and it's giving me back that same love in return. You know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it, I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them, and I always make them a part of it. And I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people. And I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there. And that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused. Just really, you know, excited.
Demetrius Flannery, a.k.a. Lil Meach.
50 Cent in Atlanta. told me that he was going to move me from my hometown, Miami, to L.A., put me in acting classes, and I had to go 5 days a week, two times a day. Only had about a year and a half, but once I started, I didn't want to stop, you know, so once in a lifetime opportunity, I didn't want to watch somebody else, you know, get the role of playing my father and me having to watch him on TV. Opportunity passed me by, so I just buckled down and just focused, man. Put everything to the side and made sure that my number one thing that I wanted to do was focus on being the best possible actor I can be for the show. And that's how it happened, man.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
That is the voice of Common. You went to Florida A&M.
Oh, FAMU days were some of the best days of my life. I mean, I had so much fun there. It was like invigorating. It was an introduction to a new aspect of culture in the world. I mean, the Southern girls is just incredible. you know, the food was great. The black college experience, you can't beat that.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K. What was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a big package for you to become a better player, but for me it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car, and I was driving it in first 8 games, and you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite three topics.
Hey y'all, it is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row. Tune in if you want to catch the best BEST interview ever.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio. Let's keep things moving here on the program. We're joined by a young lady, as a matter of fact, no stranger to the program, and you're going to know her from a lot of different things. As a matter of fact, she played Tasha St. Patrick, of course, in Power and Power Book 2 Ghost. You've seen her in many, many films. Of course, also Queens is another TV show that she was in as well. Notorious, the big film that she was in. She's in a new film, Abducted, at an HBCU, which premieres Saturday, 8 p.m., 7 Central. On Lifetime, she is Notori Naughton Lewis. She joins us here on the program. Notori, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me and such a glorious introduction.
Well, look, you're in the way I look at it, you're royalty. As a matter of fact, it was 10 years ago, almost around this time, that you first appeared on the program, the first series, the first season of course, Power, which has been absolutely phenomenal. I want to start here. I got to start here with the film. The intro to the film, or the beginning of the film, I should say, was kind of funny. You were racing against your student. Like, I'm of a certain age too. Like, you understand what I'm saying? So I get it. Like, you're trying to keep up. I mean, that you were putting in some work trying to keep up with her on the track.
I was trying, you know, I'm still young now, but you know, these 20 something year olds, they got it. I had to say, all right, you got me that time, but you know, it's all good. So yeah, it was a great way to just introduce their relationship in the film between Miss Ellen and Shannon. You know, there's a camaraderie between them, even though she's her student advisor counselor, but there's a friendship and a love there.
Believe me, I was on vacation last week. I was playing some kind of, you know, one of those video game football games. It's like a 2-minute game. I was gassed. Okay, I'm in pretty decent shape. I was gassed.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? So in terms of that whole running thing, I mean, I don't even know how you did. I don't even think I could have done that much in terms of where you
were. And we did that many times. It was a good little workout for me. I think we shot that scene at the crack of dawn too, from the beginning, but it was on Morehouse campus. Yep. At the college, and it was, you know, it was fun, but definitely was a workout.
Yeah. And by the way, I must say, Columbo is not corny TV. It is a classic, like all of these other ones, Andy Griffith,
right?
All of those. Yes.
Yes, that's one of my lines. That's so funny. With my love interest, that's so funny. But it's funny, my dad used to love of Columbia. I used to watch it only because of the business. He knew, he always discovered the, you know, where the criminal, the crime. Very good show.
Yeah. So Ellen Hampton is the role that you play. Again, had a chance to see the premiere of this film. It takes place, as you mentioned, at an HBCU, Arrington College. In real life, you're right, I recognize immediately that it was on the campus. Well, I would assume at least that track part was on at BT Harvey Stadium on the campus of Morehouse. Tell us about your role as Ellen Hampton.
My role of Miss Ellen Hampton is essentially the role of a very nurturing, loving student advisor who really has a special bond and empathizes with her student, Shannon. Shannon, played by Tanyelle Keon. Tanyelle plays Shannon so beautifully. And the one thing that I think the bond is that we come from similar backgrounds, knowing that Shannon, you know, doesn't come from much, you know, low income and just, you know, struggled as a kid and has some challenges with her parents, particularly her dad. I think that Miss Ellen is one of those people that really just cares and invests in her students. She really supports their dreams. She gets to know them as people. I think, I enjoyed this character because she also has a military background, which she uses later on to kind of, you know, fight to save Shannon's life. I think I just really enjoyed, you know, how invested she was. And to show that people get involved, you know, like a student advisor, you wouldn't anticipate that she would go to such great lengths. But when you care about someone and they don't have to be your blood relative, you can, you know, go hard to bring them to safety and save their life.
Naturi Naughton-Lewis, of course, plays the role of Ellen Hampton on Abducted at an HBCU, premieres this Saturday, 8 p.m., 7 Central, on Lifetime, as she joins us here on the program. Got my Morgan shirt on. I'm a Morgan State grad. Proud grad, of course, of an HBCU.
Okay, I see you.
There you go. Baltimore, Maryland,
I
right?
I love that.
Yes. So for you, how much?
Okay, go ahead, Morgan.
That's right. That's right. So what did you, I don't know, what more maybe did you learn about HBCU specifically, as it relates maybe to this film?
I didn't learn anything more in particular, but I learned just the disproportionate numbers of Black girls. 36% of the Black girls, you know, or people that are missing are Black women. Yet Black women only make up 14% of the population. I learned that. And then shooting it on HBCU and seeing the community. And, you know, I didn't have the pleasure of going to an HBCU, but I'm around so many friends and family. My parents went to Shaw University in North Carolina, shooting this in Atlanta at Morehouse. There's just such a community. And I think that's one of the things. Whenever I'm in Atlanta or shooting on HBCU, I really get a sense of the community and the togetherness and the accountability for each other. You know, particularly as Black people, we have to all look out for each other. And if we don't matter to each other, it won't matter to anyone else. So if one of us goes down, we all go down, and we need to look at it as a sense of unity. So I think just being able to shoot on HBCU was really empowering. And our writer is a teacher at that HBCU at Morehouse. So it was just really good to see the energy. But I didn't learn anything different because I've always loved the energy at HBCUs.
Wow. We talked 10 years ago. I had no idea. I've been associated with Shaw for over 20. We're in Raleigh. So I've been associated with Shaw for over 20 years.
Really?
Yeah, as the play-by-play
voice. That's where my family's from.
That's what I'm saying. Wow. I didn't know that. That is so cool. Thank you for sharing that.
That's,
you know.
So, no, and shout out to, yeah, and I mean, they went way back in the day, Shaw University in, you know, Raleigh or Durham, I think.
Raleigh, North Carolina. Raleigh.
I was going to say, I think it's in Raleigh. Mm-hmm. I go to, my mom's side of family is actually from Raleigh. My dad, he was from St. Croix, the Virgin Islands, but they met at Shaw. And Shaw University is such a big embedded thing because my brother also went there. I almost went to Shaw. And I just love the fact that, you know, the way the relationships in Black families were built and really thrived in that historically black college environment. Like, those are the universities that really, I think, create a unique bond that is not like anything else.
We want to respect the time. A couple of more thoughts. Naturi Naughton Lewis joining us here on the program. The film Abducted at an HBCU. It premieres Saturday, 8, 7 Central on Lifetime. Tasha St. Patrick was so go hard. You understand what I'm saying? Like, what can you speak to playing that role? And boy, that, I mean, you talk about an iconic role in once history is all said and done in what will be an iconic series in Power. Can you speak to that?
I would just say that I didn't know it was going to be this iconic. I just wanted to do good work. Playing the role of Tasha St. Patrick really did change my life. 10 years is pretty, I guess it's pretty amazing and very iconic. To be able to be a part of the culture and the history of television, so many people come up to me and tell me, like, I grew up watching your show. I'm like, wait, when did you start watching this? You're too young. But it's really interesting how these characters connected to so many people of all backgrounds. And now I'm really, it's interesting. The first six seasons of Power, they're like being watched over and over and over again. And now Ghost is coming to its final season. So it just feels good to be able to say that I had a consistent job for a decade. And it really did give me the opportunity to grow as a woman, as a producer, as a mother. I became a mother on this show and then, you know, got married. So it feels like life really opened up for me with Power, and it gave me power. So I'm grateful for the opportunity.
What do you remember? I have a record around here. We collect records, like old school, old school records, original. I've got a 3LW record. I can't find it, though. What do you remember most about those things?
Really?
Yeah, with 3LW.
They just came out. Well, there's like new, I have the record upstairs. The new 3LW actual album record came out on, I think Urban Outfitters did a special edition. Oh. So you can get one like really easily, like right now. And it's the original with all the original thing. It's pretty cool. So I can't believe that was 24 years ago.
Wow. And what do you remember most about that time?
I just remember being super young. I was 15. I feel really grateful that I came through that situation, you know, better. It had its challenges, but honestly, I do remember the fun. You know, when I think of the beginning, it was a lot of fun. We got a chance to, you know, go on tour with Destiny's Child. I was on the NSYNC tour with Pop Odyssey tour. I mean, it's unbelievable the career path that I've had, because I sometimes forget that I've been going for almost 25. I mean, this upcoming year will be my 25th anniversary in the business. And I just am grateful to, again, have the opportunity to not only do music, to do Power, but to do an impactful film like Abducted at an HBCU. It really gives me an opportunity to show people my range and to bring my influence to something that is really important, because my career as a whole is always about picking and choosing things that hopefully will inspire or ignite change.
Last thought, are you a big sports fan?
It depends on, well, to an extent, I love basketball.
Okay. So what, NBA? Are you into the,
WNBA? Yeah. I mean, the only basketball that I watch is the NBA. Sorry. And I'm a fan of the WNBA too. Angel Reese is killing it right now. I love her. I don't know if I'm a crazy sports fan, but I watch it. My husband is. He's obsessed with football, everything. I probably know more than I should because I watch everything. But yeah, I'm an NBA fan. I was happy. You know, I watched the finals. It was at Dallas. I mean, that was really crazy, a crazy sweep. But yeah, I am a Jersey girl. You know, the New Jersey Nets used to be New Jersey Nets, but now they're the Brooklyn Nets. So a lot of people don't know the Brooklyn Nets were originally the New Jersey Nets. And that's actually how I got discovered. I started singing for the New Jersey Nets. But yeah, I love sports, love basketball. I'm a Jersey girl, but there's not many teams I can really claim these days.
I was going to say, do you cheer for Brooklyn since they moved out of New Jersey? Do you cheer for Brooklyn?
Oh, I still, yes, I love the Brooklyn Nets. I cheer for Brooklyn, but I don't have, you know, I'm a 90s. I was a Chicago Bulls fan growing up my whole life. I mean, I was in the Jordan era and Scottie Pippen and all. So I guess for me, I just now I don't feel as impassioned because no one sticks with one team anymore. They keep switching around. And I'm like, wait a minute. I thought you were on the Dallas Mavericks. And wait, now the gold, now the Clay is moving to. I'm like, wait a minute. I just need one team to stay the same for at least 5 to 10 years and just do like Jordan and Pippen did.
That's right. Abducted at an HBCU this Saturday, 8, 7 Central on Lifetime. Check out Naturi Norton Lewis. She plays the role of Ellen Hampton, and she joins us here on the program. Naturi, great to catch up with you. Continued success in all you do.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. And shout out to Raleigh and all my people, the Chavis family. That's where I'm from and my people. And just shout out to you guys for supporting my career through all these years. It means a lot.
Glad to have you, Naturi. Thank you. We've got more of Box to Row on the other side. Keep it locked.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Talking about what the Lakers aren't doing. But is it part of the responsibility on both LeBron James and Anthony Davis to be the catalysts of the team and then let those role players do their job? Yes, you need the role players to be better, but I mean, I would push back against the fact maybe the Lakers aren't a contender but it's not because the Lakers don't have good pieces or aren't a good team. It's because all of these other teams are really, really good.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
It's Donald Ware, From the Press Box to Press Row.
Wherever and however you may be listening, thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day. Actress Naturi Norton Lewis joining us in the last segment here on the program. So let's talk. We had media days for both the CIAA and the SWAC this past week. I'm going to start with the CIAA. I think somebody's got to help me understand, okay? Virginia Union has been, actually Virginia State has been picked to finish first by then Virginia Union, even though Virginia Union, the Panthers are the defending champs. Now, just for a little bit of background in terms of the upcoming season, the CIAA has done away with divisions, so it won't be divisions. It'll be the best 11 teams competing for two spots in the CIAA championship game. And I thought it was I thought it was fantastic last year when the SIAC went to this model. I think it was superb because now you're not talking about the best, because sometimes the best two teams are in the same division. And if you were to go by the way the divisions used to be within the CIAA, even going back to last year, then I think the two best teams are Virginia State and Virginia Union. But I would say Virginia Union, then Virginia State would be the two teams. I would put it in that structure. So I would have Virginia Union and Virginia, then Virginia State. But it's the predicted order finish is Virginia State to win it, Virginia Union second, Fayetteville State, who lost in the championship game last year. Boy, was that six straight championship games for Fayetteville State, I believe. Number three, Johnson C. Smith, four. I thought Johnson C. Smith had a pretty solid season last year. Bowie State looking to bounce back at number five. Winston-Salem State, number six. Seven is Shaw. Eight is Lincoln of Pennsylvania. Nine is Livingstone. Ten is Elizabeth City State. And 11 is Bluefield State. Look, I think Lincoln's going to be a lot better than people think. I'm really high on Isaiah Freeman. I thought he made a significant jump from his true freshman year, by the way, 2 years ago, to last year being first team all CIAA last year and now coming back as the preseason you know, the player to watch, the preseason offensive player of the year. Okay, I do think Lincoln is going to be a lot better than people think. But going back to the Virginia Union and Virginia State deal, like, didn't we see this last year? I think Virginia Union was picked lower than it should have been going into last season, and proved that it was true because it won the championship. But look, Virginia Union's got one of the best running backs in the country in Jada Byers. Jada Byers is a two-time HBCU All-American. He rushed for close to 1,200 yards last year. The previous year in 2022, he rushed for like 1,400 yards. I mean, when I've got that guy, I mean, for me, that's all. He's what I need. And further, for Virginia Union to be the champs and then have that guy coming back and a couple of other preseason all-conference players, I might add, to be picked to finish second, I don't know. But I definitely don't agree with that. I think Virginia Union is definitely the team to beat. I believe people are sleeping on Lincoln. Not only do you have Isaiah Freeman, Malachi Langley, had a really, really good season last year. So these two guys are coming back. Man, I like Lincoln high. You know, I like Lincoln top five. You know, I think number eight is a little bit low for Lincoln. I like Lincoln in the top five. You know, one of the things that's interesting coming into this HBCU football season that we haven't had in quite some time is a big time turnover in coaches. Big time turnover in coaches. If you look at just the Division I level, as far as HBCUs are concerned, you have 8 new coaches to programs. There are 21 Division I HBCU programs. You've got 8 new coaches out of 21. So that's what, close to 3 out of 7. So what is that? That's like close to 40%. Somewhere between 35 and 40% of the coaches with respect to the Division I HBCUs are new coaches. Grambling's got a new coach. Southern's got a new coach. Arkansas Pine Bluff has a new coach. Texas Southern has a new coach. Florida A&M has a new coach. Mississippi Valley State has a new coach. Also, Alcorn State has a new coach. And Hampton has a new coach. You've got 8 new coaches just at the Division I level, not to even mention, you know, Benedict's got a new coach. I said 8. It's 9 because Chenis Berry's at South Carolina State. He goes from Benedict to South Carolina State. You've got 9 new coaches, 9 of them. Okay, so that is in the 40 percentile in terms of the number of new coaches that you have at Division I HBCUs. What came out of the SWAC media day in terms of predicted order of finish? In the East, Alabama State has been picked to finish first in the East. Now, unlike the CIAA, which I don't like that pick because, and again, the reason that I don't like that pick is not because it's not because Virginia Union, the Panthers, are the defending champs. It's because not only are they the defending champs, meaning the Panthers, but they got Jada Byers and others coming back. In this particular scenario, I think you lose a lot. You know, Willie Simmons, no longer the head coach, has moved on to be the running backs coach at Duke. And Alabama State made a surge. Alabama State got off to a really, really slow start last year, losing early on Tuskegee, I believe Alabama State lost to, and then turned things around and finished the season strong. So I like I like this, and I think when you're Florida A&M has lost a whole lot, and its head coach. I think it's going to be hard to bounce back from that. I do like Alabama State number one, Florida A&M number two, Jackson State number three. Look, I think you could flip flop Florida A&M and Jackson State. In my opinion, you could flip flop those two programs. But the way that it was picked, Florida A&M 2, Jackson State 3, Alabama A&M 4, Bethune-Cookman 5, and Mississippi Valley State, that's in the SWAC East. In the SWAC's Western Division, you've got Alcorn State, new coach, but a lot of really, really good players returning. A lot of really, really good players returning, including Malachi Bailey at one of the defensive end positions. And I think that's going to be key, you know, especially because, you know, you've got Coach Thomas there at Alcorn State. He's a defensive-minded coach also. So I have no problem with that. Prairie View A&M obviously had a really good season, played in the SWAC championship game last year. I mean, really, you could flip-flop either Alcorn State or Prairie View A&M to win the East. The predicted order of finish is Alcorn State 1, Prairie View A&M 2, Grambling State 3. Now, I think Grambling's going to be an interesting situation because you've got a really, really good quarterback coming back in Miles Crawley. He was second team All-SWAC last year. Played really, really well in Hugh Jackson's system. We'll see how he plays in the current system. I think you tailor with a talent like a Miles Crawley. If I'm the coaching staff at Grambling, I'm tailoring what I do to his attributes because I think he's that good. But Grambling at number 3, Southern at number 4, Arkansas Pine Bluff at number 5, and Texas Southern at number 6. Remember, Texas Southern loses Ladarius Owens, who was also was an HBCU All-American, and I think he led all HBCU running backs in rushing yards. So Texas Southern loses him. But look, I think Grambling's going to have a really good season, a better season maybe than people think, especially because of the quarterback position, okay? And, of course, you have a lot of talent that's coming back. But I'm interested to see what's going to happen in the SWAC because you're talking about 7 new coaches just in the SWAC alone, 5 of those coaches coming out of the SWAC Western Division. The only coach that remains is Bubba McDowell, the head coach of Prairie View A&M. And listen, I think you could go either way in terms of Prairie View A&M winning the Western Division of the SWAC. You could go either Prairie View A&M or Alcorn State. I probably actually would lean more towards, I like Alcorn, but really, I think Prairie View A&M should have been picked to win the Western Division, and I like Prairie View A&M from more of a stability standpoint. I know, you know, Alcorn's got, I mentioned, you know, Malachi's returning at one of the defensive end positions, but again, you could go either way. I probably would give the slight edge to Prairie View A&M. So look, football season is here. You've got the MEAC having its media day on next week, and we'll talk a little bit more about the outcomes of the MEAC media day on next week. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Notori Naughton Lewis for joining us today here on Box to Row. Remember, those that are going to be in the Durham-Raleigh area, countdown to kickoff Saturday, 5 p.m. at Sticks and Vines in Durham. Come on out. The rest of you, you can watch on the Box to Row YouTube channel. And always remember to support those that support Yo. Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.